This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting adventure here on Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as usual, by my heavenly body himself, Josh Rutledge.
Why? Thank you.
My buddy Lance, who is my co-host on Unhappy Campers, him and I joke all the time because I played a character one time where I said, "Honey, you're just like Jesus on the cross. Heavenly." And so that's,
I thought it would be dead.
No, that's yeah. The thing that's what everybody thinks, that everybody's mouth dropped, and then I just said heavenly and turned it into a compliment, and everyone was like, "Hurrah, you did it, buddy."
I see what you did there.
Yeah. But no, thank you so much for being so heavenly, Josh. Just, you give me something to look at besides the door. we're thankful for you guys.
I have a glow.
You have a globe, but not a glow. thank you guys for tuning in. We've got a really cool episode. We've got a getting spooky episode for you guys. Haven't had one in a minute. We're getting spooky with the head of Detroit Paranormal Expeditions, Mr. Todd Bonner. He's going to be on the line here in just a moment. We're going to be meeting up with him and talking all about all the spookiness that's happening in Detroit and beyond.
Yep, exactly. It's a really great show tonight.
Yeah, and it's cool because, you know, a lot of people know I'm from Toledo and my family's from the Detroit area, so there's a lot that hit home for me, so I'm very excited about that.
I drove through Michigan once on the way to Canada.
Ooh, you're so cool. But before we get to that, I want to share with everybody our word of the week. That's right, our psychic word of the week from our cool little book. I've turned the pages and I stopped a little early this time and came across the word, term, Akashic Records. Now, if you're in the New Age community, you're pretty familiar with it. I know I am. But here is what it says. Akashic Records. In Jungian psychology, the collective unconsciousness, that part of the Earth's aura on which impressions of every person who ever lived, including their thoughts and feelings, every event, no matter how minor, and all possible concepts are completely and permanently impressed. Many clairvoyants who tune into the past, including a lot of psychic detectives, say they read the Akashic Records in order to get their information. So essentially it's like a database. It's the cloud.
It's the Dead Sea Scrolls of the Earth.
Yeah, it's the cloud of the Earth. It just stores everything. And it's way our brain works, you know. Everything is stored there.
Yeah, there is just whether or not you can access it.
Correct. Absolutely. But yeah, so Akashic Records. Boy, we could do a whole episode on Akashic Records, I'll tell you that. Before we get moving into Todd, I want to get into a little bit of spooky news. That sounded gross, Todd. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yep. Before we talk to Todd,
yeah. I want to talk about some spooky news and not some creepy news, because that's what that would have been.
Yeah.
All right, so got some interesting things happening recently. You know, we just recently talked about SpaceX, and it looks like Virgin is now also taking $1,000 down payments for space trips and stuff, and they ended up on the New York Stock Exchange. That's not my spooky news. That's just interesting that I read about. But the story that I have comes from sciencefiles.com, and the headline reads, "A new theory on time indicates present and future exist simultaneously." So the box universe theory describes now as an arbitrary place in time and states that the past, the future, and the present all exist simultaneously. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor of philosophy, Dr. Bradford Scow, suggests that if we look down on the universe as if we were looking at a piece of paper, we would see time spanning all directions exactly the same way that we see space at some point. So what does this really mean? Well, this suggests that time as we know it is incorrect. In other words, it is not linear as we have always thought. In fact, everything around us is always present. Dr. Scow is not the first scientist to question the way that we perceive time. In fact, in 1915, Albert Einstein introduced a theory of unified space and time. In his general theory of relativity, he proposes that space-time takes shape in multiple or continuous ways, and that if viewed, you'll see both as a four-dimensional vector space, and this vector is known as Bloch theory. In fact, he said, "The distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion." The author here argues that he wouldn't want to believe in that unless I saw good arguments for it. I was interested in seeing what kind of view of the universe you would have if you took these metaphors about the passage of time very, very seriously, Dr. Scow said. He also continued by saying the Bloch universe theory says you're spread out in time, something like the way you're spread out in space, and we're not located at a single time. Now, Dr. Scow agrees that while these things change and we see them as if time were passing, he believes that we are in a scattered condition and that different parts of time may be dotted around the infinite universe. And he goes on a little bit more to talk about possibility of time travel and things of that nature, but nothing deep enough for me to continue on. But I find that very interesting. I've never believed that time was linear. Time really, at the end of the day, is a construct, in my opinion, of the human mind.
Well, I mean, time was created to explain the passage or the coming death, basically.
Yeah, essentially,
I mean,
it was
that's all it is. It's the body changes from one day to the next or from year to year, and so therefore we had to have a way of tracking those changes. So we, humanity, came up with the concept of time. But, you know, the movie, there's a movie, Interstellar, which is a fantastic
movie. Great
movie.
I actually saw that in IMAX in Chicago.
But that movie right there does a really good job. I mean, yes, it's about space travel and stuff, but it's really about the concept of how we perceive time.
Right.
And so that is a great movie to look at with the lens of think about how we perceive time.
Well, it was interesting, too, because it kind of gave an explanation for possible paranormal things too, right? In a way.
Right. So I mean, that movie that really sticks out to me is the scene where the guys in orbit and the crew has gone down to this planet to check on this other shuttle or whatever. When they're on the planet, it's like minutes have passed, but because they're so close to a black hole,
right,
so it's slowing down time for them, but while the other guy's in orbit, it's been 16 years.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I'm about to bring out Doctor Who, but the last, I believe it was the last episode with Peter Capaldi, I'm not sure, it's either the last one or the one before, but in that, there was this huge ship, I mean, massive, massive ship, and I mean, it spanned hundreds of thousands of miles. And it got close to a black hole. And there were things that were happening, and that because time was so different, there were these ships that housed individual little cities, is essentially what it was. Well, if you got closer to the black hole, some of those cities had progressed so far, they were futuristic and things like that, where the ones closer to the other side were more still kind of jungle-ish and things like that. And so time was changing, and you could see the progression of time happen depending on which level of the ship you were moving to. It was really, really interesting. It was a really cool concept, and that's exactly what that made me think of.
Yep.
So, but yeah, that's my quote, spooky news for the week. Just because I really found that interesting. You know, like we said, we like to touch on some scientific theories, even if they are a little fringe.
Yep.
So, did you have anything you wanted to hit on this week?
For spooky news?
Yeah.
Nope.
All right. Well, then we are going to move on to a little bit of creepy ketchup.
Creepy ketchup. Creepy ketchup. Creepy ketchup. Creepy ketchup. Y'all, it's creepy.
All right. I had something I'm going to tell you right now. I don't remember what it was. It was really, really light. I feel like something, I either saw something out of the corner of my eye or bumped me or something, but it wasn't enough for me to remember. So my apologies, everybody.
So I just have two things. One is the last time we recorded the last episode, we were at your house, and while I was sitting in the chair recording, I felt like the back leg of the chair moved down, like the floor had depressed, and the chair leg moved down, and then I felt something bump me on the shoulder, like something walked up and stood next to the chair, and so the floor depressed down, and then it bumped me on the shoulder.
Well, it's interesting. I showed you when you were there that I discovered that adjacent to my house is this very small neighborhood graveyard.
Yeah.
It looks like there's maybe six or seven stones back there, but yeah. I'm like, you could see it from the back window.
Well, and it's, let's be honest, it's probably not a neighborhood graveyard. It's probably, that was a farm.
Yeah, like an old family graveyard, yeah.
But yeah, so it's, so there's definitely something going on in your house.
Yeah.
It's not data. So
no, it's not.
The second thing that I have is, and this is, for me in my house, I've actually had a little bit of a slowdown time for stuff happening. And when I think about it, like, because I think it's my grandfather who's coming to help guide me in this journey that I'm on, because he's not been around as much, it makes me think that maybe I'm in a good place on this journey.
Sure.
And he doesn't necessarily need to be here to guide me.
Yeah, I mean, on the psychic side of things, we did recently cleanse your home a few weeks ago and things like that. That's when things started to slow down as well, so.
And then, but one thing I do have now is when I lay down at night to go to bed, I kind of in my mind say, if there's anything out in the universe that wants to show me anything, do so tonight. And I pretty much do that every night when I go to bed. Well, every night when I go to bed, I have normal dreams. You know, the exception being last night, I had a dream that this morning, I when I thought about it, I felt like it was like a glimpse of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually, it gave me an idea for a business idea for myself and somebody else far into the, you know, mm-hmm. 5 or 10 years in the future. But anyways, that's what really happens, though, is I have normal nights, but then when I wake up in the morning, I just have this rush of all these ideas and theories, and most of them...
Like the Wi-Fi had been cut off, and then...
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it was turned back on.
Yeah.
And it's like... And most of them expound on the theories and ideas from the previous day, and so it's like a continuation. It's like it's like someone's reading me a book, and I'm channeling that into... Because I'm doing video diaries,
right?
And then the next day, it picks up where it left off the day before.
Interesting, very, very interesting.
And so, one of the things that, you know, we're going to do for those who are listening is we're going to be starting a YouTube channel that is called Fearscape Unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
That is basically you and I talking about our theories,
right?
Things.
And kind of not holding back. So don't let your kids watch. We might let loose, man.
Right.
Yeah. So it'd be like old school Fearscape.
Yeah. So definitely not a kid. Probably not a kid friendly show. Yeah. Although there may be some more kid friendly episodes.
Sure.
But yeah. So that's where I'm doing these video journals. Not only to help me retain what I'm, I guess, spewing, but also to help me. For us to be able to talk about on our upcoming shows.
Mm-hmm. I want you to tell everybody what you dreamed last night.
I don't want to, because it is such a huge business idea.
Okay.
That I don't want somebody to run and run with it.
Okay. All right.
I mean, I'm going to be so I'll tell you one of my dreams that I had the night before was of my dog that passed in mm-hmm. March of last year. And so he like was out in the yard, and we threw the tennis ball, and then we came inside, and we used to do this thing where I would get down on my hands and knees, and I would duck my head, and he would, like, duck his head, and we would just kind of, you know, do what dogs do, but we would do it as person and dog, and I hope that's not weird. But
nope.
So in my dream, we did that for a few minutes, and then he laid down, and I'd pet his tummy and stuff, and then we just kind of laid there and cuddled for lack of a better
term.
No,
I feel you, man.
So it's, you know, that would be the only thing, I guess, that from a dream perspective that, you know, if he is visiting me, he's visiting me in my dreams.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I think I've always believed that spirits have a way that they can visit us. I feel like anytime my grandmother shows up in my dream, it's like a real conversation. It's really interesting. You know, it's different than most dreams.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so that's this week's creepy catch up. So let's get into our UFO sighting of the week.
Yeah. So this is actually, this is a combination of sightings, and it's relevant because of something else that has recently come out, and it's also relevant because of a theory that I have on that something else that's come out. So this comes from K-Ron, Channel 4. And
oh, that's not his name?
No.
Hey, y'all, my name is K-Ron. I just want to tell y'all about a UFO that came down and got me.
You know, it reminds me of the... No, well, it reminds me of in all the Keel books, they talk about the Men in Black talking in a sing-songy kind of voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what does that even sound like, a sing-songy
kind
of
voice? It sounds like the Skinwalker.
Hey, y'all want to come over and play?
That wasn't the Skinwalker. That was the Jersey Devil.
Same thing.
Anyways.
Same thing.
So it basically says that huge, silent, unknown craft have been reported flying over populated areas dating back decades. What are they? Black triangles or boomerang-shaped objects, some larger than known aircraft, have been documented, even filmed, over cities across North America as well as in Europe. If they're a classified military project, investigators wonder, then why are the military jets scrambled to go after them? Now, to answer that question, it could be because they're testing how the craft handles against military jets. I could kind of see that. But so they launched on several occasions top-of-the-line military aircraft against the things, and they were left in the dust, says Dr. Colm Kellner of the National Institute of Discovery of Science, or NADS. NIDS. one minute over, they're overhead, and the next minute they're off into the horizon. So these all started, I think, really back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, some of the stuff that happened over, like, the Phoenix lights and everything
right.
we talked about, that was in 97. Then there were sightings in 2004. So it spans, like, decades of these triangle-shaped sightings. Now, kind of jump back a couple weeks, there was an article that I think you found and posted on our Facebook page about the Navy was granted a patent.
Yes, yes.
For a triangle-shaped craft that uses electromagnetic drive.
Yeah, it's the only reason I really didn't share it here is because I had already shared it online.
but I mean, so that, to me, raises the question of, one, are we, in fact, developing that? Because they were just granted the patent in, like, 2018. If we were building this in the 90s, you would think they already have a patent for it.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, is it a release of a? Did they make it known they were? I don't know, offering or applying for a patent to discredit actual sightings of triangles. So if you videotape a triangle object, now people will say, "Well, it's the Navy has a patent for it, so it's probably the Navy testing it."
Right. The same thing when the stealth bomber and all that was before it became known.
Right, exactly. So not to say that we're not coming up with triangle flying craft, because that would be really cool if we are, because that really breaks the whole concept of an electromagnetic drive, breaks what we have to this point thought about as combustion and everything. So I think it would be a real leap forward for us as a people, as a human race, to think about things differently in the way of how we get around.
Right, and that leap forward will hopefully, you know, we'll get to the point where it'll be the leap home. A little quantum leap for you. You're
okay.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome. Call me Scott Bakula.
Okay, Ziggy. So yeah, so that's the MUFON. It's not really a recent sighting, but it's just really interesting about, I don't know, all these things. And then I think it was back in 2018, I sent you, Stefan, the article that I found that talked about China creating a UFO shaped helicopter, stealth helicopter.
Yeah,
that kind of like just was out there, and then nobody talked about it. But again, it's like, are we actually building these things for flight, or are we building these things so that we can point to them and say, well, look, here's where China built this thing? Or
it is. It's like, why would you create a triangle shaped, like,
well, let alone, even if you figured out electric magnetic drive and stuff, triangle shapes, unless they're thin enough or aerodynamic enough, don't fly well. Mm-mm. They create a lot of drag, just from a aeronautical term. But so anyway, so all that to be said, that's the MUFON story.
All right, so let's go ahead and move right into our interview with Todd.
Yeah.
All right, thank you guys for tuning in. We are joined here with a very, very special guest. Like we said, we are with Todd Bonner here with the Detroit Paranormal Expeditions. And we are so very thankful to have you on, Todd. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me on. I'm excited.
Yeah, so, and you reached out to us. I think we ran maybe an ad on Facebook, which gets mixed results. But in this case, it turned out well because you reached out to us and said you wanted to had some interest in being on the show. And we love interviewing people that are actually out in the field doing what we're on here talking about. So it worked out well.
Yeah, we have a lot of times. We've got Keith Age from the Louisville Ghost Hunter Society, the old original rock and roll ghost hunter. So he's been our main ghost hunter. So we're excited to have another one.
Yeah, Keith's a great guy. I met him a few times down in Ohio on a couple events. He's a good guy.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He's on here quite a bit.
So, so Todd, I guess if we could just talk a little bit about, I guess if you wanted to say in, a 5-minute elevator speech, if you will, a little bit about what DPX, how you guys got started and what you kind of focus on.
Detroit Paranormal Expeditions, I started with Jeff Adkins back in December of 2016, and we were on a team prior to this for 4 or 5 years together, and that's how I actually met Jeff. So I kind of got my feet – I can even jump back a little farther how I even got to the paranormal. I had a couple near-death experiences when I was younger, and then in high school we used to sneak into an old abandoned mental institution here in Michigan.
Like us with Waverly.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Waverly too. I've been there a few times. Yeah. I love Waverly. So we'd go into this, hospital all the time, and there's tunnels and 40 buildings to explore, and it was wide open. And a girl I was dating at the time, we went to the basement of this huge building. It's probably 200,000 square feet. And there's 6 of us at the time, and her and I broke off from the group and went on our own kind of exploring. It was more urban exploring type thing.
Right, and kind I heard of that abandoned building stuff, yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's how I always loved urban exploring when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. If someone dared me go to a vacant house, I would go in it.
Oh yeah, that was me too, Todd. Man, like growing up in Toledo, we had an old paper mill or factory, like literally 2 blocks from us, that had been closed down the entire childhood I was there. And so me and my friend Nick, we would always be the ones that had to go in there, and like we'd come back and tell stories.
Right. It's fun because I love that feeling of that scared feeling. I can't explain it to people. It's like I don't do roller coasters. I'm afraid of heights, believe it or not. But even doing the paranormal and urban exploring is like that rush to me, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to explain.
Yeah, I get that from pizza too. So.
Oh, yeah. Pizza on a Friday night. Yeah.
Woo, yeah.
myself and the kids love that.
Yep.
So I heard a disembodied voice, and at first I really, it was a male voice telling us to get out or you should leave. Mm-hmm. And I knew at the time I couldn't justify that it was a human. It was human, but I could tell it wasn't something on this earth or alive at the time.
Right.
So the girl was with kind of freaked out. So we kind of looked around and there was nobody. We finally caught up to the rest of the group, and that kind of stuck with me. And that was in high school.
Now, and quick question, did she hear that as well, or was it just you?
Yeah, she heard it too.
Oh, wow. Even better, yeah.
Yeah. so it kind of, you know, she's like, oh, we're going to get in trouble. I'm like, there's nobody in here. You know, because we were always worried the police or someone would come in there and get
them. Oh, absolutely.
No one ever, like, that ever happened. So it was kind of like it piqued my, I knew it was something else. And I think I've always had that intuition from mm-hmm. having near-death experiences when I was younger. And they've been exploring the paranormal. I loved horror movies. It kind of all kind of intertwined for my life for some reason.
You sound like me.
And it kind of took off from there. And I kind of kept it, because this is back in the late 80s. And there was no TV shows. There was no one to really talk to about it. My father was a police officer for 34 years. He was actually a police chief.
Wow.
Here in a city out of Detroit. So we grew up in a household, Catholic schools, grade school, high school. You're kind of taught that those things don't exist.
Yep. Same. I went to Catholic school myself, man.
Right. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's kind of ingrained in you growing up that those things don't exist, or they are evil, that you don't mess with those things. So I never really said anything until I got older. And it kind of became more mainstream, more TV shows. There was mm-hmm. more, it wasn't as taboo to talk about. I think back in when I first had my experience, if I would have talked about it openly with people, besides the people that were there, I might have been in a mental institution.
Yeah.
Might have put me away. You know?
I 100%, you know, like I share a story on here where the very first ghost I ever saw, which I believe was my aunt who had passed away before I was born, my fifth grade teacher, Sister Mary Patrick, convinced me that it was a guardian angel, right? Like, not a ghost, you know,
right?
But a guardian angel, right. You know, because it's either one or the other. There's
it's either
no,
good or evil.
Yeah, there's no in between. Yeah. There's no human quality to it.
Right. And that's the way it is. I think society and parents, obviously, because it is more mainstream now. People are more open to it, I guess.
For sure.
Or it's not something that you deal with on a regular basis. But back then, there was no one to really talk to about that stuff.
Yeah. Well,
some people think you're crazy.
YouTube and Facebook and just so many outlets to find things like this, where then we just, what was ever was on TV or at the local library, you know?
Well, and then on...
All right,
the double-edged sword there, though, is that there's also a lot of fakers now. So it not only does it give you a voice or an outlet to talk about it, but it also, in a way, kind of makes you have to make sure that you are 100% true, that, you know, that you followed the Hippocratic method and everything, and make sure that you produced your results so that somebody can't come along and say, well, you made that in your basement.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now obviously with technology, there people can produce more fake images video styles than ever before.
It's hurting us big time, for sure.
It is. And as far as our evidence, we just put our evidence out there, and it's up to you to believe what you want to believe or come up with your own conclusions. We don't force anyone to believe in the paranormal. It is what it is. This is what we've captured. And I can't explain. I tell people I can't explain. I don't know if it's ghosts. I really don't know if it's ghosts. There's a lot of theories. It could be parallel universes. It could be...
Yeah,
there's just so many different. I don't know. I mean, there's no scientific studies to see exactly what we're experiencing. I mean,
but whatever it is, it's like, let's check it out and, you know, at least get as close to it as we can.
Right.
Right. Right. Well, I think that's what keeps bringing me back more and more and more. Every time we get a piece of evidence or we have a personal experience, you want to see how far this can go. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Kind of. You want to see what's going to happen next. At least that's the way I look at it for myself personally.
I saw something on Twitter a couple of days back that said, be wary of anyone who claims to be a paranormal expert. Because
I don't know if there is any paranormal experts. I think there's people with experience. People with more experience could be looked up to, maybe. I still don't like to use the word expert because it's a pseudoscience, really.
Yeah, right. You
know, I don't really think there's really any experts in the field. I don't even call it a field. I don't even think it's a scientific field. I call it more of a community. So many people do it.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I like that.
And a scientific field, you know, obviously when there is studies and stuff, there's a database. There's no database for paranormal activity. There's no one spot to go to where you can do research or, and I've talked about this before. If the paranormal was ever studied, it'd have to be in a controlled environment. Say, let's take Waverly Hills, for example. Mm-hmm. It'd have to be like in a bubble for a year almost.
Yeah.
We control the temperature, the weather, electricity, everything about the structure itself. and not have any outside contaminants come in, and then do studies. And that'll never happen because I don't know how many millions that would cost, but you have to have a controlled environment, just like any scientific study of any kind of activity or
right.
virus or anything else, to see exactly what you have.
Well, and not only that, you would have to have your, I can't remember what it's called in science terms, but your neutral or whatever, your control. Is that mm-hmm. what it's your control? So you'd have to have another similar type place where you did all the same stuff and tested it to see if you had, you know, you had
to
one that
compare,
was your,
to compare
yep. it to. Yep.
The placebo site. So, also sounds like a band.
Really? Really? And that's the only way, I guess, to really prove results. I mean, because a lot of teams and groups or individuals will go on and do, you know, they can go, I'll use Waverly Hills again because you guys have been there too. Mm-hmm. Everyone that goes there doesn't have the same experience.
Yep.
I mean, they hear rumors. Oh, I heard, and I don't usually like to listen to other people's stories before I go to a place.
Same.
Because you don't get that in your head, you know, that thinking in your head ahead of time. Like, well, your anticipation.
Right.
You kind of go in there blank with a blank slate and come up with your own conclusions and see if you experience right. stuff.
Well, it's interesting. I also found that if you go somewhere expecting to experience something, typically you don't experience anything. Like, that's
yeah.
my experience anyway, that mm-hmm. if I am looking for something to occur, nothing occurs.
Yeah. And you know, it for me, the same thing kind of falls along the lines of like EVPs. I'm like, if I ever capture one, I don't, when I'm sharing it, I try not to tell people what I think it says to see if they hear the same thing. You know, because if I set you up ahead of time, that's what you're going to hear.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. Yeah, that's and we work with psychics, and I try to. I'm not a psychic by any means. I think my intuition's strong from doing hundreds and hundreds of investigations. Mm-hmm. I trust my gut. But when we work with psychics, we never tell them any information of the place we're going to and down the history. And what we found is they work better when they don't know anything about the place
yeah.
we're going
yeah.
to. So I try to adapt that to when I investigate too. I mean, there's sometimes I do the research of a location. And, you know, you kind of get some of the history to it, but I don't like hearing the paranormal experiences too much.
Yeah. Yeah. The same goes. I read tarot as well. And I struggle reading myself because I know everything about me. And so it's absolutely clouded. I can't find real information because I'm already thinking about myself and everything and trying to fill in the gaps. And I feel the same way for a psychic. It's like, if you give them everything, they're even if they are truly psychic, it's going to be hindered because it's going to be gaps are going to be filled in where they may not have should have been.
It's like walking into a smoke filled room, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Same thing. Yep.
So you had some near death experiences. You and your girlfriend snuck into a place and somebody told you to get the F out. And then fast forward. What came next?
Many years went by. I lived a fairly normal life. And then I just decided when I got older, I said, I don't really care what people think about me. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit anymore. I'm just going to do this. You know what I mean? Because I think once you kind of put yourself out there with social media, people start judging you. And it was still relatively new, the paranormal. I mean, there's a few TV shows on. So I joined this team. I met Jeff. We were on this team, like I said, four to six years. But we wanted it was more, they did a few things a year. We want to do more. We started to get that taste in our mouth.
Yeah.
And we, you know, want to go places and experience things and explore more. So we just decided to create our own team in December of 2016. We started out with nothing. We had nothing at all. No equipment, anything. We just said, we're going to do this. We recruited some of our friends that were interested in this stuff. And really the rest is history to how we got to where we are now. Kind of just took off. We started going places and meeting people. And we've traveled all over the United States and been to a lot of awesome. The famous haunted locations. And but we like doing we're a huge, one of our main, I guess, goals starting out with was historical preservation. If there's any way we could help with the paranormal, preserve and raise money. We've worked with a lot of historical societies and businesses that are trying to save historic buildings, whether it's public tours or public presentations and stuff like that. So we've been very, very fortunate and very, very lucky to use the paranormal to help others in other ways. You know what I mean? Not necessarily paranormal ways, but, you know, we've worked with, we've donated a lot of money to charities, Ronald McDonald House of Detroit. We've donated a lot of money to Gleaners Food Bank here in Detroit. We've worked with them quite a bit. So we've been able to turn the paranormal into ways to helping people, just general people that aren't even into the paranormal.
That's amazing.
That is awesome. Yeah.
We've been very blessed, very lucky, and we'll keep doing more. We created a beer here in Detroit with Atwater Brewery.
Yeah.
A paranormal-themed beer. It's called Hello from the Other Side. It's a stays on.
That's awesome.
So if you're up in Detroit, stop at Atwater Brewery or Atwater in the Park in Grosse Pointe.
Yeah, I might do that.
Hello from the other side.
That's fantastic.
It's actually pretty good.
Cool, man. Yeah, my improv troupe, there's a local coffee shop here that'll name coffees off after things, and we had our improv troupe years back had our own coffee. It was damn good coffee because we were damaged goods. So.
Yeah, it was kind of a cool thing, and I'm surprised that Atwater wanted to do this with us, and they said, yeah, let's do this, and come up with some ideas, and we said, can you make something with sage, and they came up with sage saison, and
awesome.
You know, I'm not a big, like, beer drinker, craft beer drinker, but mm-hmm. it actually tastes really, really good.
That's awesome, man.
That's great.
So you guys got, so you've had 4 years and you guys have busted your ass, and now, I mean, you're traveling all over the country. That's pretty remarkable. And so I would say that tells me you guys are doing a lot of research on places you want to reach out to and having to essentially be salesmen, so to speak, as a way to get yourself invited.
Yeah, when we first started, I reached out to so many people, just email and beg, because we want to come, because one of our things too is trying to get in places that have never been investigated before.
Right.
And we've been lucky to do things like that. So now that our popularity's grown, a lot of people come to us now. So
great.
That's pretty
that makes
awesome.
It a lot easier. You know what I mean? I used to call and email and hound people. And,
yep.
I still do.
Yeah.
But it's easier now, they'll,
yeah,
oh yeah, yeah. We've heard of you guys, or we saw you on the TV or whatever. Even though they think we have more credibility because we've been on TV, which really doesn't matter. I think our work speaks for itself.
Right.
But sometimes people think that way.
You mentioned earlier about how when you first got started, that there was it was still kind of a taboo thing almost a little bit. So I wonder if as society is starting to accept more of the paranormal investigation stuff, if that's opening these businesses that are operating in these locations to want to have that come in, one, for exposure, right? Because I'm sure you're going to talk about their business, and so that's exposure for them. And two, because it adds kind of that cool factor for that location that kind of helps to set them aside from someplace else.
Yeah, and some places embrace the paranormal, business owners, and it's surprising me who sometimes the people are. We worked with Wayne State, it's a college here in Detroit.
Yep, I'm very familiar with Wayne State.
They have Bonsall Theater. It's mm-hmm. a 115-year-old theater in downtown Detroit. It's reported to be haunted. When we first started, I reached out to them, and they're like, no, we don't let paranormal stuff come in. And fast forward 3 years later, they're reaching out to us to come investigate. And we had Channel 4 News went with us on it. And we ended up doing a tour there and raising money for their dance and theater class at Wayne State. So things like that happen where before they wouldn't let us, and all of a sudden now they will, which is really, really cool because we love Detroit. The Bonsall Theater is a beautiful theater.
Yeah, absolutely.
Haunted. We got some really good evidence out of there.
Yeah, my theater professor was a Wayne State, got his master's degree there. And so when I ended up going to Western Kentucky University, for us to both be able to talk about Detroit was really amazing. And I almost went to Wayne State myself for my grad, but ended up just being a lazy bum instead. But but yeah, that's how we got
Jeff from the team actually graduated from Wayne State. So Lauren from our team graduated from Wayne State.
Love Wayne State, man.
Cool, cool campus. It's right in the heart of downtown Detroit. And like I said, Detroit style is getting built up. It's really, really nice. So it's fun doing stuff like that. We're able to give back.
So I want to jump a little bit into kind of what you guys have actually got going on right now. I saw, I think it was maybe a couple of days ago, a pop-up on YouTube that you had put a new video up for the naval base. And then I think you got some other things going on.
There's a city, it's on an island, it's called Groseal, and there is an old naval base that people kind of forget about was on this island. It's right out of, sits right on the Detroit River, out to Lake Erie, and it was huge. It was a huge naval base, one of the bigger ones inside the United States, and it operated to like 1960s, mid-60s, and then it was shut down. But like George W. Bush earned his wings there, Bob Barker, Amelia Earhart came through there, had dinner at this place we investigated. Charles Lindbergh came through this place we investigated. So the barracks and everything else are tore down. There's only two buildings left, one of the hangars and then this officers club. It's like they had dances, and some of the higher ranked officers would stay in this nicer, instead of the barracks, would stay in this, I guess it was like a giant house, but they had a bar and a dance floor, and it's a really, really cool place. And this guy's trying to, his dad started saving, his dad passed away, then his son has taken it over. It's kind of like a bed and breakfast, but it's not, like, you can rent a room for like $100 a night. They're refurbishing each room when they get the money and try to save the, because it's a rather large, I want to say it's maybe 40,000 square feet, so it's not really small, and it's three floors.
Yeah.
So we've got some really, really good stuff out of there, and the gentleman's dad's name was Art. So we've talked to people that worked there before, and it's the ghost of Art. You gotta, you know, you hopefully contact the ghost of Art.
Right.
And we actually did. He said, I'm proud of my son with our spirit boxes. I'm proud of my son, what he's doing. Said his name, Art. So it's kind of rewarding for us. And then also his son to hear that, you know, and his son was like skeptical. His wife was skeptical of the paranormal. And I approached them. I said, would you guys ever, because we've always heard it was kind of haunted. And they've never had anything paranormal done there before. And I said, we'd love to help you guys save the building. And we could do tours. We did a couple tours there. We raised a few $1,000 for them, and it, you know, goes to help towards, you know, restoration and restoring this beautiful place. But it's awesome to do something like this. And like I said, it's an old naval base. It's kind of paying respect. And people think, you know, the paranormal, it's you're conjuring or you're provoking. We're not. We're just the opposite. We try to communicate. And sometimes they don't communicate. Sometimes they do. We try to pay respect to the, if you believe they're human spirits, pay respect to them as much as possible. And it seems like places that have, at least from my experience, seem super active. You know, I don't know if they've been waiting for years and years and years to have someone talk to them, but it's I find that it seems active more than usual.
Well, and I know I've lived in some houses that we've had some activity, like so. My grandparents' house, for example, that I've talked about on here before, but it was built in 1825, and it had a doctor's office. Yeah, so it had a doctor's office and a school on one side of the house, and then living quarters on the other side when it was originally built. And so, in the doctor's office, as you can imagine, there was a lot of activity that happened in there. Lamps would turn on, an electric organ would turn on and play sometimes, and so. The number of experiences that I've had in you know, just leads me to believe that there's something going on. But one thing I really never like with anybody that I've watched or been with is anybody who provokes the ghost into doing something. And I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Zach Bagans who does that. He's, you know, I'm like, leave him alone, man. Ghost got feelings too.
No, yeah, I don't either, because I think, you got to think, like, if I always think of it, like, if someone's coming to my house, how a stranger's walking into your house and they just start, what's your name? Who are you? I mean, you got to think, I try to look at it in that terms. Like, how would you act walking into a total stranger's house? You know, you got to try and be polite, respectful. And I think that's another reason we get a lot of responses. I mean, I don't know why we get so much evidence that we do a lot of EVP stuff, some shadow figures and some things caught on video, but I think it's the way we approach it. I've never wanted to provoke anything. I've ran into, I want to say, negative energies, nothing demonic. Because if you do believe they are human, there's good people in real life and there's bad people in real life. And I don't think that changes once you go to the afterlife. Once you pass on, I think if you're bad here in the real world, you're going to be bad on the other side. You know, so I think sometimes you run into people like that, whether it's in prisons, you know, murderers or people that career criminals that have been bad people, some of those energies linger for some reason. And those might be the negative energy you experience. Not everything's demonic. I see a lot of people want to have demonic experiences, but I don't want to ever have any kind of experience like that. That's scary and that's real, and that can really put a lot of ruin your life if you ever have any kind of demonic, from what I've read and what I've seen.
And one of the theories that I have is that vacant buildings, because they don't have any other influence other than potentially those energies that are left behind, that they become a vacuum and they draw any energy that's in the area. So it could be positive or it could be negative because it's a vacuum of space, and so nature abhors a vacuum. I'm curious if of the areas that you've gone to, if any of them have been left vacant for a long time, and if they had, do you typically have more experiences in those places than others? It would help me to maybe validify my theory.
There's been one. I'm trying to think. One place that's kind of vacant. The upper floors are vacant since 1982. It was a psychiatric hospital here in Michigan called Eloise, and we were the first group to investigate it back in August of 2018. The first two floors were in use until 2016, but the upper three psychiatric wards floors were not in use. They were locked off. It was actually like stepping back in time. And for me, the first time we investigated there, I don't want to say ran out, but I got out of there fairly quickly. That was on the third floor. I think that's on our YouTube channel. I think Jeff might have put that on YouTube. But we had our cameras going, static cams going on the third floor. And we had investigated till like 1:30, 1:40 in the morning. And I think there were six or seven of us there at the time. And so everyone came up on the third floor. We started talking. And I got on my phone and started catching them on Facebook or whatever. And I kind of got into my phone like a fool. And everyone walked away. And I was left alone on the third floor. Well, I didn't know at the time, but everyone had left the building.
Oh, my goodness. You need new friends.
I was in there by myself. So a lot of times when we do our investigations, we run static cams and we'll do a Facebook Live so people can actually watch the investigation live. So I had the monitor and the Facebook Live was going, and I was a little bit scared. I'm not going to lie, I was a little bit scared. I'm afraid to admit that I'm scared during this sometimes. And I was by myself on the third floor. It's a huge building. It's 200,000 square feet.
Wow.
So I, in my mind, I felt comfortable, like someone was there with me talking to people on Facebook. They're asking questions about Eloise and the investigation. So I talked back and forth with people. And then I started hearing something in the back of the ward that I was in, like footsteps. Mm-hmm. So at first I thought maybe the guys had snuck back around and came back in the building and were trying to scare me. And I took my flashlight, and this is on our static cameras around there. You can see there's nothing in there. I'm saying, hello, hello. And you can hear me saying, hello. And I just go back and just kind of rationalize it off because I was by myself. And I go back and start just answering questions again on Facebook. And then it got louder. And it kept coming closer and closer. And I could feel, I guess, again, I'm not a psychic or an empath or anything like that, but I could feel this energy coming towards me. Mm-hmm. And I said, I shot my flashlight again. There's nothing there. And I said, you can hear me say, you know what? I'm done. I'm out of here. And I took off out, went down the stairs. There's no power in the psychiatric hospital. I run out. It takes about 2-3 minutes to get downstairs. I go on the parking lot and I see everybody's outside. So that's when I first knew that everybody was outside. So I said, there is something up there. There's something up walking around, making noise. I don't know what it is, but you guys need to come up there. So they're like, yeah, right. Yeah, right. I said, come up here and check this out. So we went up there. Nothing happens. It's all quiet, of course. And the good thing is we were recording it the whole time. So when we went back after the record, went back and reviewed the audio and video, that you can watch myself leave, and the camera's still following me all the way out down the stairs. As when I'm gone, for at least 5 or 6 minutes straight, there's footsteps. There's a shower, patient shower area. You can hear the shower curtains going back and forth. You can hear cabinets opening and closing, like filing cabinets. You can hear footsteps, things dragging across the floor. The camera's there. There's nothing on the camera, but you can hear all this on audio. And you know, with like paranormal, like activity, or when you capture an EVP, it's very subtle. You have to go over and over. Did I hear that? What is this? This is not subtle. This is very blatant and loud. It's probably one of the best experiences, even though I was scared somewhat, that I've ever had paranormal wise. you know, especially capturing the evidence after I had left the room. It was
right.
Just very loud and blatant.
That is an amazing experience. I have not had an opportunity to have an experience like that. I would welcome it.
Yeah, you say that now.
I know, and people get mad or question, like, well, you're a paranormal investigator. Why wouldn't you stay there? But I always tell people it's like a fight or flight type instinct.
Yes.
Like, I wanted to stay. Trust me, I want to stay. Yep. But my body was saying, go, just right. Go. Something's not right, just go. You can't
my
control
mind
those.
Is telling me no.
Right. Right. It's just a crazy. So I don't know if that answered your question about a place that's been
yep.
abandoned for, you know, 20, 30 years. For us to go to that first night, that kind of activity happened that's never happened to me before.
Well, I'll tell you, speaking of old abandoned and Detroit River, my dream spot is to someday get to go to Bablo Island. Like, that was, you know, my place when I was a kid. Have you guys ever had a chance to get out there at all?
No, that's on the Canadian side. They do do tours over there. There's still a few, I guess, the pavilion, because I used to go to Bablo too when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Those are
oh,
go
yeah.
to. And there was one of the boats here in the river, but it got caught on fire, I think, last year, I want to say.
I had been following
trying
that.
Trying to save it.
Because it was so cool to see the old boat, like, and to remember being a kid and going on that.
And I guess there was a welder in there, and I guess one of his, I don't know. They really don't know what happened, but it went up in flames. You can still see it on the river, but it's probably beyond repair now. But he was trying to save it and salvage it and kind of bring it back to its glory. But no, Bablo, it's been one of the places I want to go to. There's a lot of cool things still there.
Yeah. I watch a lot of YouTube videos of people, like, you know, sneaking there and and going and checking out all the old buildings.
Not that we encourage trespassing.
No. No, that's one thing we don't do because obviously we're an LLC. We're also a business, so we don't break the law. We get permission from every business that we, you know, place we enter. And I mean, I'd love to. If I wasn't on this, if I didn't own this company, I would obviously do something like that. But, when I was younger, I used to be fearless, but I don't condone trespassing now. You know,
especially
I mean?
Across international borders, man.
Right. No. Yeah, catch an American. I don't know what the Canadian laws are either. For
yeah,
it could be a
you don't,
lot harsher
you don't,
than it is here.
You don't want an Aqua Mountie coming after you, man.
No.
We have a place here that's called Bros
Island.
Yeah, that's and I, okay. I want to go. I want to do that so bad. And we have a place here called Rose Island, and it's right across the river in Indiana, and it's this old amusement park that was there late 1800s, early 1900s, and most everything is gone, but there are still, like, foundations and a few, like, pillars, and it was during that neoclassical period, and it's incredible, and, you know, you can take tours as well, but a lot of people that grew up in that area talk about years and years and years ago when they all used to just sneak out there and smoke pot and, you know, get into the buildings that were dilapidated that are now gone, you know, so.
Right.
There's something about that, yeah. But, yeah, I'm with you. I'm too old to be sneaking onto stuff anymore.
No, you know, my knees can't handle it. No.
Yeah. Like, if somebody shows up, I'm like, you got me.
Yeah. I didn't run it anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, when you're younger, obviously, if you did get caught, they'd please just send you home and you get in trouble by your parents. You don't know what you're going to run into now.
Ooh, especially
owners
your dad.
Of properties and yeah. Yeah. So I didn't do that stuff too often. And when I did do it, I never got caught. Thankfully. let me say it that way. I didn't get caught really.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Todd, it's been great having you on. We honestly probably could talk for a couple hours, but we try to make our show just a little bit over an hour, and so we've gone for quite a bit. And I just want to touch on a couple of things. One is there anything that our listeners should know about you, like anything that you got going on that you want to get out there for our listeners to know about?
Yeah, especially because, like, my whole family is from Detroit, Flint area. And, in fact, I reached out to a number of them when talking about you guys. And a lot of them had heard of you guys from the news and things like that. So we have a lot of listeners that are already up in your area. So,
okay.
Absolutely.
We're going to be doing some tours again this year. We just did one at the Naval Base, the old Naval Base, the Pilot House. We're going to be doing, there's a place in Detroit called the Sixth Precinct. It used to be the old Detroit Police Department, Sixth Precinct, over on, in Southwest Detroit. A friend of ours is restoring this building. We're going to be doing some tours there. We're going to be in West Virginia at Sweet Spring Sanitarium May 28th, I believe, for a public event there.
This year, so yeah, we'll be out that way. That's not far from us. So.
Yeah, Sweet Spring Sanitarium is supposedly really super haunted. A friend of mine runs that, and I saw it on Destination Fear. It was a show on Travel Channel. They came out and filmed us. We were at Eloise, and then they did Sweet Spring Sanitarium, and that was one of their most active places. It looked creepy to me, so I'm excited about going there. We're going to Beaver Island. We're going to work with a lot of historical societies. We just signed with Detroit Historical Society here in Detroit. We're going to investigate Fort Wayne.
That's awesome.
Their historical site in downtown. Probably do some public stuff there too. Just still finalizing that stuff. But yeah, we're all over. And we usually post on our social media.
I might be able to, if you guys are ever interested in getting to Toledo, I got some contact. My whole family, my main family is there, and there's a lot of historical buildings there too, man, that are ripe for that.
Yeah,
stuff.
We'd love to.
Yeah.
We'd love to. A guy reached out to us, a friend of a friend of a farm in 1850 in Temperance.
Yeah.
Fishing. And I think that's kind of by the Ohio border.
It's my dad lives right on the border. It's like 10 minutes up the road is Temperance. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Jeff and I are heading out Sunday and talk to his family, but they've sent us pictures of this girl in a white dress all over their property. So it looks like a ghostly figure, and then a picture in their house. And it's the farm is in 1850. It's a huge, huge site, so we're excited about doing that. And anything like that that's never been investigated before, again, you never know what you're going to get. That's what makes this fun.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that when going through a lot of your evidence and stuff, that was one of the stories that stuck out to me was the one of your people, I can't remember the name, but she had seen a woman, and it was like, you guys need to get out of here.
That was a lighthouse in Beaver Island, and of course Jeff and I, we don't listen to that. We went right in, and that's captured one of our best EVPs ever, actually, by disobeying that energy. I think it made her mad, and she told us to leave or get out. Or that one's another one you could kind of come up with your own conclusion what it says.
Right, and you know what? You told me you're a horror movie guy too, just like me. Mm-hmm. And you know, when the crazy person is telling you to get out, you gotta get out, man.
I know. I broke the code of the horror movies. I go right in. Go right head.
Yep.
Right in,
like thank you for the warning. I appreciate it.
So hey, Todd,
we're actually going.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say we're actually going back. That we're captured that EVP, and what you were talking about, that lady telling us to leave, the energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lighthouse on Beaver Island.
Yeah.
Here in Michigan. And so we're going back. We're actually going to stay the night. We've got access to the actual house this time, which we couldn't get access to last time. We stayed the night in this place. Yeah. I don't know how cool it's going to be because it kind of scared me, but.
right. Good scared.
I'm looking forward to it.
That's fantastic, man. I am a good jealous of you guys. Like, it's one of those, especially because, you know, you're in my family state, you know, like, and I love Detroit. I love all of Michigan, and it's cool to live vicariously through you guys.
it's been fun, and we've been very lucky, very blessed. We're very humbled by the support and love that we get, and it's been amazing.
Absolutely fascinated at looking at all your guys' stuff and how much you've accomplished in 4 years. It's remarkable.
So, hey, Todd, I just wanted to ask you one more thing, and that is, how do you feel about ancient aliens?
We always try to ask a question that's outside of your purview.
ancient aliens. Aliens, you know, paranormal, I'm really into aliens. I've never really got into that much. I think, obviously, there's something else out there besides us. And I sometimes think that the paranormal, I don't know if it could be aliens that we're talking to now when we do the paranormal stuff, the EVPs we capture, the shadow figures, honestly. And people have talked about this. I've been kind of researching alien stuff lately. That I do believe that aliens have been here maybe before we were.
I mean, the universe is really old. So,
yeah, I mean, the path we're on right now is we're reading a lot of John Keel, the guy that wrote the Mothman Prophecies, and watching a great documentary called Hellier. We've been obsessed with that. And it's that idea that all paranormal things are truly the same thing. They're really connected somehow. We just haven't figured it all out yet. You know, that's kind of the path we're researching down right now.
No, and I mean, I've never – I just think – like the universe is so big, and,
right.
and you know, UFO exponent. The Bigfoot stuff, I'm not so sure on because there's not a lot of evidence with mm-hmm. Bigfoot stuff.
Right.
But UFO and alien stuff, especially with the government releasing a lot of those videos now lately, and United States government, Canadian government, I guess the British government's going to release like yep. 60 years of.
Yeah, we just talked about that. They're going to have a whole website out open to the public. Like, I'm super excited to just tear through that.
Just so, I mean, it's people ask, is there aliens among us now? There could be. You know, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, that's the joy of the paranormal, though. I guess we won't ever know till we know,
till
you
know.
Yep. But thank you, man. We thank you so much for taking your time and, you know, humoring us and having fun with us and sharing your stories. And I know that we didn't even scratch the surface with you, man.
No, I have so much to talk about. I love talking about this stuff, obviously. That's why when I saw your guys' thing, I'm like, yeah, I'd like to reach out and see if you guys want to have me on. I'm glad you guys did, and I had a great time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, maybe we can have you on again sometime else.
Yeah, and if I get up there in August for the Improv Festival, maybe we can grab some coffee, man.
Yeah, just get a hold of me for sure. Yeah I'll be around, and maybe I'll show you a couple haunted spots around here.
Absolutely.
Now I need to go to the Improv Festival.
No, you stay where you're at, buddy. But yeah, thanks so much, Todd. It's been an absolute pleasure. Where can they find you? That's the last bit for give your plugs.
You can find us at our website, DetroitParanormalExpeditions.com, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. I even think we might have a Snapchat. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I think everybody kind of has a Snapchat.
I'm a little bit too old for that. The younger guys on the team do the Snapchat, but I don't. We have it, I think. So you can go on our website, not our social media channels are on the top there. And
yep, I'm looking at them right there. We'll be sharing all of this for you. And like we said, we'd love to get back with some time, and good luck on everything you guys are doing.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yep. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Wow. Thank you again, Todd. Thank you so much. And thank you, DPX, for letting him come out to play.
Yeah. I don't know if he asked for permission since he started it.
But. Jeff, we just wanted to say we'd love to have you on sometime as well. And thanks for letting Todd come out.
Play. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mom.
So lots of spooky stuff going on in Detroit, Michigan. And, you know, my family's up there. It's like they've all got – I mean, I grew up in a home that was very open to the paranormal. And everybody had stories and ghost stories. And you know, my grandmother was a psychic and all sorts of things like that. And it's cool to hear things from around my neck of the woods.
If anybody listens to this episode and doesn't take away at least the fact that you have family in the area.
Did you guys know
that they didn't listen?
That I'm from Southeast Michigan, Northwest Ohio area. That's where my family's from. So, but yeah, what a great bunch of just stories, and I can't even wait. I want to dig into the evidence some more. I've been playing through the website as we've been talking and things like that. I mean, they have so many EVPs on their website and just news stories, and I love his outlook on it. As we're just going to put it there,
right?
I mean, believe it or not, I'm not going to try to defend it. This is just what we saw and heard.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the approach we have for the show, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's pretty much.
You know, when you guys tune in and you listen. And you can decide if you want to accept what we offer or not.
Yeah, you can accept. In fact, speaking of accepting, when I was at Circle K yesterday, I had this girl was like, hey, can you pass me a straw? And I said, yeah. And she says, after I get this straw, can I ask you a question? And I'm like, oh, cool. Maybe I taught her improv or theater at some point, or maybe she knew my voice from Fearscape. Yeah. No, it was about if I knew what was going to happen when I die.
Oh.
And so I've got this 13-year-old girl trying to get me to accept Jesus Christ in front of the Coke Zero thing. So that was fun.
No, she dipped her finger in the Coke and blessed your
forehead. Yeah, bless my forehead. I don't know. Whatever. The stories, though, what I wanted to really get to was our listener story this week. We've kind of gone back. We had some UFO-style cryptids stories, and so I want to get back to another ghost story. This comes from a listener named Ricky Sexton. who is a member of the Haunted History of Kentucky page as well, and a listener, and this is his story. It's spooky.
So I have a story from my childhood that my mom told us kids, and it was one that she was told when she was young, and I always loved to hear old spook tales from years gone past, and I heard a lot of them when I was a kid, and I always listened with great admiration, so here's one of those tales about a family was living in this house, and they heated and cooked everything on a heating stove. Most people did back then. And when they would get in bed every night, they would hear something exactly the same time every night, and it sounded like the front door opened and someone walking in and going to where the heating stove was, and they would get up and they would look, but never seen anything, and the door was still shut. And this went on for a very long time every night at exactly the same time. And then one night, before they got in bed, the husband, who was exhausted, nailed boards across the door, and at exactly the same time that night, it sounded like the door opened, but this time it sounded like chains being dragged across the floor. And it sounded like it was coming to their bedroom, so they were so scared they all got under the covers and covered themselves up, and Mama said that it came to the side of the bed where the husband was and just about beat him to death. And then it left. And when they got up and went to the living room, the door was shut and the boards were still nailed across it. They never did hear it anymore after that night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Don't nail boards across the doors.
Yeah. Once again, you know, Todd talked about this. It's like we're walking into their house.
Right.
So whether this is your house now or not, somebody lived there before. And if that spirit is there and that's his routine every night.
Right.
Whew. Boy, well, you just got into the way of that.
You know, something else that I was thinking about, and we've talked about before, with ghosts kind of inheriting the space, even if something else is built over top of it.
Yeah.
You know, and Todd mentioned that they do a lot of stuff for, you know, conservation of old places and things like that. And just so think about that. If you're a business who buys an old, let's say, factory, and it's haunted, and then you tear it down and build your new business on top of that, you've just inherited all of those haunts.
Yep, every bit of it. It don't matter what you try to do. But, yeah, it's very interesting. And it makes me wonder if those nails were made of iron and there is any truth to the idea that iron hurts spirits and things like that.
Huh.
I don't know. But interesting, the chains drug, especially with Todd's story of hearing the chains being
drug.
Right,
exactly.
As well. Very interesting.
I mean, it's, you know, you don't take just your fists to a ghost fight.
No. You take salt. You take sage. You take a woman that's short and little and named Zelda so she can say, "This house is clear." And stuff like that. But no, that's our listener story. Remember, you can send in your listener story. So thank you, Ricky. You can send in your listener story to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or find us on any of our social media at fearscapepod. That's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. DM us there. Send us your stories. Look for us on message boards. I'm all over the place. I'm all over Reddit. I'm all over any paranormal alien board. I'm out there. And also, you know, we've had some people buying our t-shirts. Thank you guys so much. You have no idea how happy that makes us. We just love spreading the word like that, and we're going to be putting some more t-shirts on there. You can get that on our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can either click the hamburger. Is that what you said?
Yeah,
it's called the hamburger tab.
The hamburger menu or the three-line menu.
Yeah, the three-line menu, and hit store or just click the store on the website and go in there. They're only about $20. They're pretty – and I've been wearing mine, and it's comfy.
It is
really,
very
really comfy.
Comfortable.
Yeah, surprisingly, because usually they're pretty – not good, but kudos to TeePublic. You guys make some good shirts. But yeah, so check out those t-shirts and check out some of the other t-shirts we put on there and support some of our friends and things like that. And aside from that, you got anything else, Josh?
Nope, nothing else.
All right, well, we gotta get out of here then, and we'll just go ahead and get out of here then. So we'll see you guys next week. This has been Stefan, and I will catch you on the flippity-doo side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And don't forget, everybody, make sure to hold those blankets extra tight. Good night, folks.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.